Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hello and welcome to your weekly true crime and real-time roundup from Odyssey. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. This Halloween weekend, we're focusing on cases that haunt us. These include unsolved crimes that sleuths are still investigating and atrocious acts that leave their imprint on the places where they were committed. A notorious LA murder, a university student who went missing in 1979 and was never found. Horrors at the Pennhurst Institution, and recent crimes near a haunted cafe. We'll start the show this week in Los Angeles, where the 1947 Black Dahlia murder has stumped investigators for decades. It all started when 22-year-old Hollywood hopeful Elizabeth Short's mutilated body was discovered by a mother taking her child for a walk. This week, Christy Strasser, host of the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, interviewed award-winning documentarian Eli Frankel about his new book on the Black Dahlia murder. It's called Sisters in Death, The Black Dahlia, The Prairie Heiress, and Their Hunter. He believes he's finally cracked the case.
One of the things that's made this persist so long in people's imaginations is just pure gruesomeness of that.
Yeah.
Of a woman being chopped in half. You know,
right.
And somewhere else, obviously, and left there, stayed, you know, as some sort of statement, but just cutting her in half. Do you think that was done for purposes of transporting her?
No. In fact, okay. What I think, because, you know, think about the severing of a human body cleanly through the midsection, which has almost never been seen. There are cases of people who have been cut in half in kind of vicious attacks by serial killers or other folks who just went crazy. We've seen that before. We've also seen people cut in half with power tools and chainsaws that didn't exist in 1947. But, you know, it really is utterly unique as the care and skill and meticulousness and the time it takes to cut a person in half. I don't think it was done for expediency or efficiency of travel or anything like that. And he very easily, I mean, listen, she weighed 125 pounds. It wouldn't have been that difficult for him to just pull her out of the trunk and drag her into the lot, which is essentially what he did. I think the severing is actually central to his psychopathy. I think that it's part of, of what he does, which is, I think he was a lust murderer. I think he was a pecarist, which is somebody who gets, you know, intense satisfaction from cutting other people, cutting skin. And I think he also wanted to exsanguinate the body, meaning drain it completely of blood. And I think he was very interested in her anatomy and literally taking her apart. And the act itself is central not to the modus operandi, it's central to the signature. It tells us his mindset and who he is. And if you really examine the photos carefully, and it's difficult to do it. You know, it's really gruesome. The cutting itself is actually not surgical. They're scalloped cuts along the edges of the skin and the muscle and the tissue. And it's not a procedure that any doctor ever did back then, nor has any doctor done today. There is no procedure that any doctor would be familiar with that would require them to literally sever through the midsection. Your patient would die instantly. It's really never been seen before in the annals of crime and murder. But that signature is so important to understanding who he is.
You can check out the full interview with Strasser and Frankel in the On Deadline podcast feed. Another cold case Odyssey covered this week is the 1979 disappearance of Mike Olson, a University of Minnesota student in West Palm Beach, Florida. Like the Black Dahlia murder, this case is now decades old. But the search for what happened to Olson continues. Jason DeRusha of WCCO Radio in Minneapolis got caught up on these efforts this week.
It is a cold case that has been cold since 1979. Long time, no answers. No answers. And our next guest has been really trying to be a resource, trying to connect people with answers in a mysterious disappearance of Michael Olson, who was a U of M student, had taken some time away from college and went to Florida. Paige Nienaber is with us in studio. Paige, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, every time that we've had an opportunity like this, it's just brought new people to the table.
Yeah, these cold cases, I think we're all captivated by it because it feels like with technology today, everybody should have an answer, you know?
Well, I remember I was in college when it happened. This was back when there was snail mail and just had heard that Mike had disappeared. And it was, you know, when you're 18 years old, you know, how does that happen? I rediscovered the case when I was helping a client create resources for a podcast they were doing. And his story was there. And it had everything, the full story, and that his car had disappeared along with him, just seemed unbelievable to me. I mean, how does a car disappear?
Yeah, how does that happen? You, there is a Minnesota connection, of course. He was a U of M student. He had family in the Twin Cities in Edina, right? And
yeah.
And so that is part of what got your interest. But tell me kind of what you did and how you've been trying to find answers.
Well, I stumbled on the case, and I remembered it when it happened, and there just hadn't been much traction on it back then because it happened so far away. It happened in Florida.
Right.
So there'd been a couple Star Tribune articles. So I thought maybe there was something I could do to make noise about it and get people to notice it. And I found myself out at Lord Fletcher's with some people from my high school, and one of them was chief of police for one of the western suburbs. And the first thing he did was dramatically lower my expectations and ground me in reality. But he did say something that was really profound. And he said, nothing bad will ever happen if you shine a light on this. And he said, your goal in the case of West Palm Beach, where this occurred, is to continually be in front of the police department, continually, you know, be in their face so that hopefully they'll take another look at it.
What is the luck been, I guess? Because there have been searches. And basically, the working theory here is that maybe something happened with the car. When you look at the geography of West Palm Beach, right, obviously it's around a lot of
water. Everybody who is involved with this, who is in Florida, thinks he's in the water. I talked to the guy who's in charge of the dive team for West Palm Beach Police when this happened. He said he always thought that Mike was in the water. And it was just aghast that the police department never considered it. So that was one of the first things we started doing was I went to if you look at a map of Florida, there's a pond every 25 feet.
Right, right.
So I went on a Southern Florida dive enthusiast Facebook page and just posted, does anybody want an adventure? And immediately heard from a company called Darkwater Dive. They came in, they did a few dives. And what's happened again is every time there's been any kind of story about this, it's kicked something else loose. So another team, Sunshine State Sonar, came in. They've found 100 cars so far.
100 cars,
but all auto fraud. They found so many cars that in one afternoon that they shut down tow truck service in West Palm Beach because all the tow trucks were there, but waiting to pull the cars out, but not Mike's car.
Not Mike's car. Still no, there just have been no answer.
No. And it happened after he'd been out for a night with a coworker. He was working at a country club. He was supposed to work at 7 a.m. He dropped his coworker off at his car at 5, said, "I'll see you at 7. Never showed up. One of the managers at the country club was, I think we can use the term, strict disciplinarian.
Okay, yes.
And so the guys at the country club immediately called the hotel where Mike was staying. He'd only been there for 2 weeks, and he was with a bunch of other guys who had been brought down for the season. And they're all staying at hotels and stuff. So they called the hotel. There was no answer. They called a little later in the day. This is a Saturday. The hotel thought maybe he was a bill skipper, so they went down to check the room, and all of his stuff was there.
Hmm.
They went over on Sunday themselves, his manager and other coworkers. The car wasn't there. They got into the room. All of his stuff was there. And on Monday, it was 52 hours after he had just vanished, they finally went and filed a police report at the same time that the people from the country club called Mike's supervisor at the Edina Country Club and said, "Have you heard from him?"
Huh.
I mean, he hasn't showed up for 2 days. And that was so alarming and so out of character with who the guy was. His supervisor immediately called the family on a Monday morning and said, "Something's happening. Something's going on in West Palm Beach. You need to call them."
This is, I mean, you're looking at 79. We're getting close to...
Right.
It's 45, 46 years ago at this point.
Right. And, you know, and trying to do research on, and, you know, there are people who have since passed away and stuff. And the police.
The parents, what, Mike's parents have passed?
They never recovered. They kept the same phone number. Mike's nieces, Tabitha and Megan, have been the champions of this. Mm. And they talk about growing up. And they would go to the grandparents' house. And the rule was, if the phone rang, you didn't answer it.
Huh.
Only the grandparents could. And they did have. The year after Mike disappeared, there were a series of hang-up phone calls that they got. And the Edina police went and put a, what they called a trap on the phone,
huh.
But they weren't able to get anything. And then when Mike's father was failing and was in the hospital, there was a hang-up phone call at the nurse's station. So there's the car missing and Mike disappearing, and that's intriguing enough, but then you have these mysteries within the mystery. There's a,
right.
a mystery woman who never came forward, that kind of stuff.
So intriguing, right? And we are in a time, as we visit with Paige Niehnauber, where there is more interest in cold cases. I think some of this is because of podcasts and Netflix and all of that sort of stuff. Has there been interest from any sort of production companies or anything into this?
There have been a couple of podcasters who have come on board. About 2 years ago, I reached out to a woman named Jenny Decker because I realized that I had no idea what I was doing. And her skill is research and investigating. So she got involved, and I really wanted her just to kick me in the head and get me to stop thinking, you know,
right.
alternatively. And so, more people have been getting on board, and it's fascinating because there's this whole subculture of web sleuths.
Yes.
That if you post to them, and they just dive in on it.
What's your hope? What's your hope that we get out of this?
All you can hope for is resolution for the family, you know, that they find it. It's, you know, they've searched every pond within 5 miles of the country club, and the police never did that. If he's in the water, then he went far afield. You know, he was a guy.
Yeah.
He had a brand new car. What do guys do? They go, they take, and there's away from home for the first time. You go for a car ride. You go driving. It's 5 a.m. maybe. And if he's away from that zone, it's going to be very difficult for him to find him.
Does this haunt you, or do you feel like this helps give you purpose?
I don't think either. I just feel that, you know, after, you know, reconnecting with the family, that just trying to use my ability to make noise about this thing. And every time something, I made a video about it because I know how to make videos.
Yeah, right. That's your profession, right?
No, I'm actually working in the media, but I knew how to make videos. And what happened was a guy in Salt Lake City saw it.
Huh.
And he reached out and he knew somebody who did professional diving. So every time something has been publicized, somebody new or some kind of resources come to the table. And the goal with this would be that, you know, your listeners, if you go to whereismikeolson.com, it's got the timeline of the disappearance and the investigation. If you go to the Where is Mike Olson Facebook page, I have the police reports. They're scanned. It's sparse. One of the few times we've heard from the cold case detective, she did say that she looked at the report and that the detectives back then, her term was phoned it in. So if you look at this stuff and you get an idea and you go, have you ever considered? Mm-hmm. And we haven't. Well, that'd be fantastic. We have all these really talented people who would love to dive in on anything that you can think of with this.
Yeah, whereismikeolson.com has a lot of the information. I did reach out today. We haven't heard back from the police in West Palm Beach, but I did reach out to them just to see, like, hey.
Good luck.
Right. That's been sort of your reaction?
I knew that the family had a really horrible experience with them. I mean, they flew down there. They were kept waiting all day. They met with the detective. They're obviously losing their mind. And the detective says, you know, Mike's a big boy. Mike doesn't need your permission to get in a car and go for a drive.
Huh.
Can you even imagine?
Yeah.
That's unfathomable.
Yeah, you wonder if that was a result of that time, of that era?
Yeah.
It's 79, it was maybe the more of an idea that it's probably just a runaway.
Absolutely. You know, and again, what 20-year-old hasn't gone out and done something stupid and then dragged themselves in a couple of days later?
Right.
And that was always the expectation, I think, at least with the people who didn't know him that well, his coworkers down there, that he's going to show up.
Whereismikeolson.com is a great resource to get information about this, all sorts of case file data. But if you're one of those amateur internet sleuths, go take a look at it, right? You'd love to have that help.
You know, again, we've looked at this 1,000 different ways repeatedly. So anything new, like somebody brought up, you know, why was his golf clubs in his hotel room? He never kept his golf clubs at home. He kept them at the country club. So why were they there? So we're not to figure out. Maybe there's something
maybe
there.
There's something
that.
There.
Yeah.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
For this next story, I went into the archives of the John Cast from KYW News Radio in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. In 2023, the show visited Pennhurst, an institution known as a haunted asylum due to its sordid history of abuse against vulnerable patients. Today, the asylum is open to visitors as a haunted house.
Drive down any highway in southeastern Pennsylvania around Halloween, and you're likely to see billboards for Pennhurst Asylum with terrifying images. It's hailed as one of the best haunted attractions in the country. But decades ago, Pennhurst was an actual institution for people with disabilities. A lot of real, horrifying things happened there, and not in an entertaining way.
When I'm giving a history tour on campus, the first question I will ask my tour group is, would you put a haunted house on Auschwitz?
Neglect, isolation, abuse. Pennhurst is one of the worst examples of how poorly society has treated people with disabilities. It's also where a lot of kids grew up, making friends, playing games. Some people spent their whole lives there. And the events that led to its closure were key moments in the fight for disability rights, laying the groundwork for advocacy and improvements over the following decades. And yet, today?
Without the haunted house, this site would not exist. There's some parts of what we do that people don't like, and that's fine, so long as we can find common ground on the idea that it is worthwhile to save the history, it is worthwhile to tell the story.
I'm Sabrina Boyd-Circa, and this week, we'll hear the real story of Pennhurst. Good and bad, past and present. We'll find out how people today are trying to acknowledge and preserve that history, and why there are differing opinions on how to do that. What have we learned from the past? And what can we do better for people who are living with disabilities now? Pennhurst is about an hour outside of Philadelphia. Coming from the city, you'd head out on the Schuylkill Expressway going west, through Conshohocken, King of Prussia, past Valley Forge and Phoenixville. You'll drive through the small, quaint town of Royersford into Spring City. You turn on Brown Road and it feels like you're driving straight into a forest. There are signs for Pennhurst, but even so, it's hard to be certain you're going the right way. You pass a veterans center, and eventually the road turns to gravel. Soon, a series of large, decaying brick buildings come into view. Windows are boarded up or just broken and left open. The walls are overgrown with vines. It feels extremely isolated, empty, and quiet. A silence that feels pensive, like there are stories waiting in the gentle wind. This is where I met Jim Werner, the operations manager at Pennhurst. There was construction going on, so you could hear the distant sounds of other life. But as far as I could see, it was just the two of us.
So can we start with kind of background intro of where we are and how, what is this place? What was this place when it started?
Of course, of course. Well, where we are right now is the former site of the Pennhurst State School and Hospital. The Pennhurst State School and Hospital opened in 1908 and closed in 1986. In the 75 plus years that it was in operation, thousands of special needs children were dropped off, dumped, or allocated to this facility by the state, as well through private channels as well. What Pennhurst was, from its inception, was a place where these children could be stored for all intents and purposes. That was the intentions of the people who came up with this very bad idea.
Pennhurst was never actually an asylum. The people living there didn't have a mental illness like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. No padded rooms or straitjackets. It was an institution where people of all ages, but often children, who had cognitive and developmental disabilities were sent to live. In 1908, people really didn't understand mental disabilities. They didn't think that people who had disabilities could ever function in society. So their solution was to separate those people, to put them away for life.
From the early years of its inception until the 1940s, when eugenics fell out of favor with modern science, things like sterilization, forced separation of males and females, as well as the idea that by having them here, they weren't out corrupting the gene pool of the general population.
Right.
All of these just completely flawed ideas, wrong ideas.
And it was an institution for what were then called feeble-minded and epileptic people, to literally and figuratively move them off the grid.
Dr. Dennis Downey is an emeritus professor of history at Millersville University. He's also the parent of a child with disabilities. He's done a ton of research on Pennhurst. He's written several articles, given talks, and he recently edited a book called Pennhurst and the Struggle for Disability Rights.
And they were people who had a cognitive disability that, as the thinking of the day was, could not be improved upon, and it could also be inherited, passed on to the next generation. The idea was to gradually weed society of this population, and they were often incarcerated for life. They were literally called inmates.
So the motivations behind Pennhurst were problematic from the beginning, but there wasn't really any other choice for people with disabilities. There weren't any community resources or ways that their families could support them. And the thought was that this would be a good place for them to live, where they'd be taken care of. It didn't take long for that thought to be proven wrong.
How many people were there, kind of at maximum?
There has been thousands and thousands of residents over the year, upwards of 3,000 to 4,000 at any given time.
Wow.
When we think about the population of the area around us, Pennhurst itself at max capacity was bigger than a lot of the local towns around us.
Yeah.
More population.
Through all the years combined, 10,600 people lived at Pennhurst. At its peak in the 50s, it held 3,500 residents at once. There was no privacy. Jim described how in earlier years, residents would sleep in packed rooms with around 50 beds lined up next to each other. Pennhurst was funded by the state, and they were not given the budget or the staff to take care of this many people.
The ratio of staff to resident could have been as higher than 50 to 1. Basic things like hygiene, sanitation, feeding, dressing, let alone the ideas of good, solid stimulus between people, become almost insurmountable tasks.
Some staff really did try their best, but they were overworked, overwhelmed. Others made the problem worse.
And I'll be honest, the staff fall to me into two very, very specific categories. You had staff here that should have been nominated for sainthood, without question. And then you had staff here that would work for the very minuscule pay that the state was offering and had no qualms about what they were doing. They didn't care. I'm sure there was a few that fell somewhere in between, but we find our stories of staff going out of their own pocket to purchase hygienic items for the residents. And then we have stories of staff who would abuse and neglect on purpose because there was no oversight.
It gave license to the worst features of human nature in terms of treatment and care. One of the critical things was the role of medical experimentation and medical research at institutions. Where else to find a large number of people who couldn't, were not required to give their informed consent before they were experimented on? It wasn't until 1973 that Pennsylvania put a moratorium on further medical experimentation. So that's one form of abuse. The other was a developing culture of what we can think of as physical, psychological, and even sexual violence.
With a simple Google search today, you can find plenty of stories of the abuse that happened at Pennhurst. But when it was operating, you wouldn't have seen that from the outside, at least not for a while.
I like when you take a walk on the catwalks here out to the dietary tea.
I can see how it would have been like really beautiful, and it's, oh, yeah, and it's prime and on a nice sunny day.
Yeah. Manicured lawns, flowers, paint on the outside, pointed, you know. And the buildings themselves are gorgeous. The buildings themselves are decorative, which is crazy because the initial construction...
Grand buildings and arches are connected by elevated walkways across large fields. You can still see the remnants of a playground and imagine kids playing on the swings and slide. This was where they grew up, where they formed friendships and memories. And that's what families would see when they came to visit, if they came to visit. They were only allowed on certain parts of the campus, the parts that the staff made sure to have clean and presentable.
They were never permitted back into the day rooms and dormitories to see the conditions. They were always kept out front. There are stories, and we talk about this in the book, of residents, inmates being given new clothing to put on, to go out and greet their family members. And then once the family leaves and they're brought back, they're switched back into their old clothing.
A lot of people hear the stories and ask, why would you send your kids to this place? Wouldn't you eventually learn about the conditions and pull them out? But even if families did find out what was going on behind these walls, it wasn't that easy.
There's several answers to it. One is that parents had very little choice.
Dr. Allison Carey is a sociologist and a professor at Shippensburg University. She specializes in health and disability with a particular focus on families. She's family to someone with a disability herself.
I'm a sibling. My sister has a disability. My mom was an activist. I got into, you know, doing work with the disability community early in life.
Allison has studied Pennhurst and the families of the people who lived there closely. And she says there just weren't many options back then.
There were not community services at the time. There wasn't even a lot of information out there. So it's not like you could go to your library or open up a web page and look at the diagnosis. So they only knew what doctors were telling them. They were told that good parents institutionalized their children, that this was a way for them to get the care and treatment that they needed, and that these kids could not thrive in the community. And when they institutionalized their child, the child became a ward of the state. So parents actually usually lost their legal rights as parents. So parents could not just then walk in and take their child back out. If you look at the Pennsylvania State Archives, you'll find letters to the governor, letters to the superintendent, basically begging for their children to get appropriate services, begging to bring their child back home. You see those letters after parents have passed away, siblings who want to bring their person back home. And sometimes it was allowed, but sometimes it was not. It was really up to the doctors and the superintendent of the institution to decide if somebody could thrive in the community or not. So it's not just the person with the intellectual disability who's losing their rights. The parents themselves are also losing their rights.
Jim Werner, the Pennhurst operations manager, says the whole haunted house thing was really about the setting.
You come to this property and it's spooky. You have these monoliths standing in the woods, kind of watching you, and open windows everywhere and sounds, and it's silent. And when you add these are perfect environments for a horror movie.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contrast. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The Cadieux Cafe in Detroit, Michigan is also a famously haunted location. This bar's history goes back all the way to the 1930s, but more recently, crime has hit the area around it. In 2014, CBS News reported that a young man and woman, both 26 years old, had been shot to death in an apartment near the storied cafe. Family identified the male victim as William Cuffey, son of a local pastor named Robert Cuffey. Speaking about the crime to WWJ News Radio, the pastor said his son, quote, didn't deserve this heinous brutality of man against mankind. The following month, CBS reported on another murder near Cadieux Cafe. A 19-year-old man named Antonio Hicks was accused of shooting his mother, Nicola Pace, and killing the Air Force officer she was engaged to marry, Johnny Clyburn. Though she was shot twice, Pace managed to call police and identify her son as the shooter. He was brought to a mental institution after the shooting. In 2023, the hosts of the Spooky J on WWJ News Radio in Detroit did a deep dive into the spirits haunting the Cadieux Cafe. Surprisingly, most of those ghosts actually had a friendly reputation.
The Cadieux Cafe is considered one of the most actively haunted sites in Detroit.
After almost 100 years, the Cadieux remains popular with the living and even with those that may have crossed over. This is the Spooky J. I'm Zach Clark. Detroit is dotted with amazing neighborhood bars that have stood the test of time. But few, if any, have the history that the Cadieux Cafe has dating back to the 1930s. And because of its history, thousands upon thousands of people have passed through the space. And depending on who you ask, sometimes spirits join patrons and employees at the Cadieux. So in our latest Spooky J, Annie Scaramazzino and I went to the east side to check out some history. The Cadieux Cafe is one of Detroit's most legendary bars, served as a watering hole for the last 100 years-ish. The bar was founded by Belgian immigrants in the 1930s, and in 1962, Robert and Yvonne DeVos bought the bar, and Annie, we got a chance to talk to their grandson, who also is named Robert DeVos.
They were only open Fridays and Saturdays, and then they lived in the back of the building for a long time. Before I was born or anything like that, my grandmother purchased the house directly behind it. I used to go there almost every day with my dad when he would have to get the bar ready and everything like that. And then I would just run from the bar to my grandma's house. And my grandfather, he was the one that purchased it. He was knighted in Belgium for bringing the Belgian culture to Michigan in some forms. He started the DeVos Debates bicycle race, and it's one of the longer U.S. standing cycling races in the country. He brought pigeon racing over. And then he also started the Cadieux Bicycle Club. I know when World War II happened, he went back and served for the Belgian military at that time. And then I want to say that's, I think, when he met my grandmother, was somewhere around that time. And if you ever go to Cadieux, the actual medal he was knighted with is in that bar.
You know, my family is from the east side of Detroit. A lot of my family is. And I know the Cadieux really well. And I've been there and I've done feather bowling, which I'm really bad at, just like so bad at. But I really didn't know about the deep background and the family ties and this whole story with the DeVos family and the Cadieux Cafe. And this was just a great excuse to learn about their family history, learn about the ways in which they brought the Belgian culture to the forefront through the Cadieux, and to be able to talk to members of their family and learn more about the grandparents that started the Cadieux Cafe and then the folks that ran it in the years that followed.
This is the original feather bowling place in North America. The unique thing about our lanes, though, is that it's the way the game is supposed to be played. They're dirt, soil. Anywhere else you see it, it's typically fabricated, you know, turf, plastic. It's not the real thing. It's kind of like putt-putt golf versus golfing in St. Andrews.
We met John Milan, who wrote a book along with Gail Offen called Michigan Haunts, Public Places, Eerie Spaces. And John says the Cadieux is as haunted as it gets.
The Cadieux Cafe is considered one of the most actively haunted sites in Detroit. According to Ron DeVos and some of the people that worked there, Ron, of course, was the one who took over for his parents. They've seen someone who was a regular who was hit by a car. They often see him running towards the building and then disappearing. They've seen a woman coming out of the ladies' room after hours. And he looked at her and he said, "Man, we're closed." And then she just absolutely disintegrated in a big flash of vapor. And he decided it was, you know, time to go home. I think the most interesting story comes from Ron DeVos himself. The person who answers the phone is sometimes his mother. He says, "I know it's my mother. I can tell by the accent." She says, "Hello, Mom?" And then it'll go dead. And then the day manager will pick up and he'll say, "Who was that?" And they'll say, "Oh, there's nobody else here."
Did you have any awareness of that when you bought the bar, those stories about Cadieux being haunted?
Yes, I had it as a customer as well. I've known about some various stories over the last 60 years plus. So we bought it from the DeVos family, Robert and Yvonne. They're the two friendly ghosts, from what I understand, who reside in this building. This table right here against the inner wall between the bar and the feather bowling lanes is where Yvonne is often seen sitting. And then Robert is typically in the basement. The encounters, I haven't had one. So just, I'm speaking, you know, from stories people have told me, but friendly ghosts. The scary things that happen around here are things, doors will close. I've seen that happen. All of a sudden, the doors close, and you're the only one in the building. Things will move at times. I haven't seen something move, but, like, you see it on one table, and then all of a sudden, you come back, and it's, like, somewhere else.
The jury might be out on whether ghosts are real, but it's clear that crimes and people who have passed on can continue to have an effect on us long after the first reports come in and long after they're gone. From the Black Dahlia case files to the feather bowling lanes of Detroit, we're haunted by our memories. Thanks for listening to this True Crime Roundup from Odyssey. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to Christy Strasser, WCCO Radio in Minneapolis, KYW News Radio in Philadelphia, and WWJ News Radio in Detroit. You can get these True Crime Roundups by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% site-wide, plus a free professional measure right now at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.